object itself becomes his. He doesn't have to return it, but he has to pay for it. So in other words,
is
the pasuk of Heishiv
is a gazer.
Well, I wouldn't say that. In other words, the pasuk of Heishiv is like Zeil Sher Gazal really splits into two. It means the object that he stole or its value. When is it the object that he stole and when is it its value? Before, so on the first level, if he hasn't made a kinyan, then he has to return the object that he stole. On the second level, this is like the fallback position, if he made a kinyan on the object, it's his, now that kinyan is irreversible, so it belongs to the gazlan. And now v'heishiv is like zeil sher gazal means its value. Now exactly how a kinyan is effectuated, there are many, many shittos. Some say that yesh itself is enough, that means the nigzal is misyayesh. Others say no, you have to do what's called either a shinui hashem or a shinui maisa, and some have what's called the shinui rishus. So I mean, that's a complicated business, some of which will come up today maybe in discussion. But so let's begin.
He remains a gazel.
Yeah, I think he still has to do tshuva, if that's what you mean.
No, if he were after Yush, if he and his guy who accompanied him saw a murder, are they aided?
Ah, he would have to do tshuva for that. And tshuva would comprise of two parts. Number one, he'd have to return the gzela, or if he met a Kenyan, pay its value. And number two, he'd have to do some sort of public act of tshuva. He'd have to get mechila from the nigzal. He might have to wear shchorim. I don't know exactly all the meaning. It's often the same. But in the meantime, he's definitely possible. Okay, so where are we up to? The Gemara says, on the bottom of Choftes Amid Beis, going on to the top of Lamed Amid Aleph, that if the lulav is gazul, it should only be possible on the first day, because the Torah requires lachem. Why is then the Mishnah disqualifying the lulav for all 7 days? So the Gemara says this is based on the principle of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Mishum dehavi le mitzvah bo ba'avera. And the Gemara is going to derive mitzvah bo ba'avera from a pasuk. One of the issues that we have to deal with today is whether or not the psul of mitzvah bo ba'avera is doraisa or derabbanan. So let's take a look at Tosfos Divrei HaMashkil Mishum Dehavi Le Mitzvah Habo Ba'Aveira. Tosfos raises a question from a Gemara later on in Masechta Sukkah. V'Hada Sanya, we have a Braisa L'Kamon B'Perek Lulav Arava, and the Braisa says the following: Lachem Mishalachem Lahotzias Hashol V'Es HaGozel. So Tosfos asks the following question: why do I need a pasuk lachem to exclude gozel? Bishlam, I understand I need a pasuk to exclude shol, because shol, there was no aver involved, and the only psul here is the absence of bailus, of ownership over the lulav, and therefore shol has to be excluded on the pasuk lachem. But the Braisa uses the terminology lahotzias hashol ve'es hagozel, implying that we could only disqualify a lulav hagozel because of lachem. And that's not true. The Gemara already established that the Mishnah passes a lulav hagozel all 7 days. If it was only lachem, it would only be possible the first day where the Torah requires lachem. What happened to mitzvah bo ba'avera? So before we see Tosfos' answer, there's a gigantic chidush here that we have to spell out. That's implied, that underlies the entire cache of Tosfos. There's no reason why Tosfos should object to the fact that lachem excludes gozel. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So when the Braisa says lachem mishalachem lotzias hashol ves hagozel, that makes a lot of sense. The answer is that Tosfos holds that even if I didn't have the pasuk lachem, the lulav would be possible because of what? Mitzvah bo ba'avera. Now wait a second. How does Tosfos know that mitzvah bo ba'avera is doraisa? Let me play the devil's advocate. Let's assume against Tosfos that mitzvah bo ba'avera is only derabbanan, and that's going to be the sheet of many rishonim. According to those rishonim, that mitzvah bo ba'avera is only derabbanan, then I definitely need the pasuk of Lachem to exclude Gazel on a Doraisa level. In other words, we want to know what would the Torah say about this mitzvah when he took the lulav that was stolen. And even if you quote and you'll invoke the principle of mitzvah baba vera LP, that's only Darabanan. That wouldn't undermine the mitzvah on a Doraisa level. And you might ask me, so what's the difference? Who cares whether he was disqualified on a Doraisa level or on a Darabanan level? And the answer is going to be, for one answer, but there may be many answers, for Suffolk. Let's say I don't know whether it was a mitzvah baba vera or not. Would I have to redo the mitzvah? So in the case of a psul doraisa, I know that I'm dealing with the whole issue. What's at stake here is the mitzvah of lulav. Then he can't take any chances. In the case of suffolk, he'll have to be machmir. If on the other hand we're talking about a psul drabanon, that's a whole different story. Now from the fact that Tosis wants to derive mitzvah baba vera and derive the psul of lulav ha-gozel from mitzvah baba vera and completely circumvent the halach of lachem, it must be that they're both on the same level and they're both d'oraisa. So we see very clearly that Tosis' premise here, and he doesn't seem to question this premise, is that mitzvah baba vera is a psul d'oraisa, and therefore Tosis says, if it's a psul d'oraisa, why do I need the pasuk lachem? The pasuk lachem doesn't add or subtract anything from a lulav hagozel. A lulav hagozel, even without lachem, let's say the Torah didn't require lachem, I can be yotze with your, I can borrow your lulav and I can be yotze. I still can't use a lulav hagozel because of the principle of what? Mitzvah baba ver. But that's only if I assume the mitzvah baba ver is what? Is d'oraisa. We're going to soon see that Tosis is very consistent in his assumption that mitzvah baba vera disqualifies a mitzvah on a doraisa level, because Tosis is going to ask the question, why do I need, in the case of Asherah, where he worshipped the lulav, why do I need the halacha which is called kintuse mechta shiura, because we have to burn this lulav? Forget about that. Tosis says, why not derive the psul of this lulav shel Asherah from mitzvah baba vera? And once again, he seems to be consistent in his view that mitzvah baba vera is a psul d'oraisa. Now, if I would tell you that if I would ask you to guess which Rishon would disagree with Tosis and hold that mitzvah baba vera is d'rabbanon, or shall I say, let me ask it to you this way. If I give you a list of all the Rishonim, which one would not be on that list as a potential machcholik, as a potential arguer against Tosis and maintains the Rabbana? Which on this list of Rishonim, which one would you cross out? And I'm going to say about this Rishon, he certainly cannot hold that mitzvah baba avera is only the Rabbana. Tosis would be on your list, wouldn't it? Because Tosis says explicitly a mitzvah baba vera. Well, in fact, I'll tell you a secret. The Rishon who holds a mitzvah baba vera is the Rabbanan is Tosis. But not Tosis here. Tosis on Daf Tes. Take a look at Daf Tes of it all. It's really interesting because this is one of the classical cases of two Tosis in that reflect two different opinions. And there are many such examples. If you look at Daf Tes Amud Aleph, about four lines up from the bottom, you'll see that the Gemara is trying to interpret and derive halachas from a pasuk, Chag HaSukkos Tasa Lecha. And the Gemara says, this is three lines up from the bottom, Livute Gzula. That the reason why the Torah added the word Lecha in the case of Sukkah is to exclude a stolen sukkah. So Tosis says, Tema. Do you see the Tosis Dima Maskal Ahu on the bottom of Daf Tesam and Aleph? Hahu mi boile lemute gzula Tema. I don't understand. He says, Tema kle mishum dahavile mitzvah baba vera. Why does the Gemara need the Pasuk Lecha to exclude and disqualify a stolen sukkah? Why not derive it from the universal principle of mitzvah baba vera? So if you'll fast forward for about five lines, there's a line that starts with the word Yeshvu. Do you see such a line?
Yes.
If you go across midway to that line, because we're not learning the whole Tosis now, he says, V'yesh lomar, the time of the mitzvah baba vera, lav da oraisa, el derabon. So we have two shitos in Tosfos, right? You know, Tosfos is a compilation of many, many different Rishonim. The Bali had Tosfos number probably in the thousands, but certainly in the tens and maybe in the hundreds. And the Tosfos here on Daf Lamed that we're studying now, Dibur Maskil Mishum, maintains that the Psul of Mitzvah Bo Bavera is De'oraisa. Tosfos on Daf Tes maintains that the Psul is De'rabbana. And then Afkamina is going to be the following. Tosfos on Daf Lamed, our Tosfos here, Lulav HaGozel, is going to insist there's no need for any Psul to exclude Gzela. A Chefta Gozel is certainly Psul in Mitzvah, and that's on a De'oraisa level. If you have any Psukim to teach you that Lulav HaGozel is excluded, then you have to know why you need those Psukim. And that's going to be a tremendous headache for us. On the other hand, Tosfos on Daf Tes maintains that I need a pasuk to exclude Gozel because the whole psul of Mitzvah Bo Bavera is only Derabon. So this is something that we want to keep in mind. So Tosfos says the following, that even though the Braisa on Daf Mem Gimel seems to, at the surface of it, derive the exclusion, the disqualification of a lulav Gozel from the pasuk Lachem, that's not the right way to read the Braisa. You have to reinterpret the Braisa. And that's on the third line from the top. He says, Mishum Sha'ul Itzrich. The Braisa doesn't need the word Lachem in order to exclude a Lulav HaGozel. Lulav HaGozel would be possible even without Lachem because of Mitzvah Bo Bavera. But the reason why the Braisa needs Lachem is to exclude the case of Sha'ul. If I borrow a Lulav, so on the first day of Sukkot, if I borrow your lulav, I cannot fulfill my mitzvah, because lachem yishalachem. And itzrich, I need the pasuk lachem to exclude shol. I don't need the pasuk lachem to exclude gozel, because gozel is mitzvah baba vera. Debelav lachem nafkal on gozel. Without the pasuk of lachem, we would in any event exclude and disqualify gozel mishum mitzvah baba vera. The Braisa says that I'm going to derive Lachem from the word Lachem Yishalachem. That's only as far as Shol is concerned. Once he mentions Shol, you know, he also mentions Gozel, because Gozel is also a problem of Lachem. But even if you would obviate and solve the problem of Lachem in Gozel, the Lulav remains possible because of what? Mitzvah Haba Bavir. Don, are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any questions until now? Okay, so far we're doing okay. So Tosfos says the following. He sort of asks Akasha on himself. How do I know, asks Tosfos, that the psul of Mitzvah Bo Bavera is Doraisa? The afagav dekra gabi karbon ksiv. What is bothering Tosfos here? Let's first translate the words. Even though, and I would add a few words here in brackets, even though you would argue against me, close the brackets. Dekra, the pasuk itself, and that pasuk is the pasuk from which we derive what? Mitzvah Bo Bavera. Gabi karbon ksiv. It's referring to a karbon. So let's take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Shenemar, second line, Veivesem gozel vesapiseh vesachole, and this pasuk is referring to a karbon that's brought on the Mizbeach. And this is going to be the source, according to Rav Shimon bar Yochai, for Mitzvah Bo Bavera. That means if you steal an animal from someone and then you want to bring that animal as a karbon, it's completely excluded. So the source for Mitzvah Bo Bavera is what? Karbon. Now, if the source is Mitzvah Bo Bavera for karbon, so why don't I assume that Hu Adin, the same law would apply to any mitzvah? Karbon is one mitzvah. We have many other mitzvahs. You know, we have the mitzvah of matzah, the mitzvah of challah, we have the mitzvah of shofar, we have the mitzvah of lulav. In all mitzvahs, we should assume that Mitzvah Bo Bavera is possible. So, what bothers Tosfos over here?
Is it a limited application or a paradigm for every other?
Excellent. What's that called? A limited application? A din miyuchad. Remember that phrase? I wrote it on the blackboard. It's probably not there anymore, but it was up on the top right here a few days ago. Din miyuchad or din misuyam. Karbon always has its own dinim. There are many psulim that disqualify a karbon that don't apply anywhere else in the Torah. The Torah is much more demanding with regard to the standards that have to be met in order for carbon to be kosher, and maybe if it's a mitzvah bob avera, you know, you want to come in front of Hashem with a stolen object that you acquired through an avera, the Torah says don't bring that on my mizbeach. But who says that you have the right to extrapolate and expand, universalize that to all mitzvahs and make it into a din klali? Maybe it's only a din misuyah. That's the kash of Tosis. In other words, Tosis now feels compelled to take a step back and somehow convince the listener in his audience that achein, this is really true, that the psul of mitzvah bob avera is doraisa. Because if I'll quote to you the pasuk from which we derive the psul of mitzvah bob avera, you'll counter argue that pasuk only refers to what mitzvah? Karma. So maybe in karma the Torah has these standards of psul that exclude a mitzvah bob avera. But maybe in other mitzvahs, who said, right? And by the way, what does carbon have that no other mitzvah has? For example, if I let's say designate this, you know, this string for my tzitzis, so you can say it has the status of a what we call a cheftish al mitzvah. But what is it, what does it not have, which makes it very inferior in comparison to carbon? Kedusha. It doesn't have kedusha. Carbon has kedusha to it. It's not just a mitzvah. When I designate an animal as a carbon, it's not just the cheftish al mitzvah like tzitzis, or like a shofar might be a cheftish al mitzvah, a ner Chanukah might be a cheftish al mitzvah. Well, ner Chanukah is complicated. Remind me when we get to Chanukah, we could talk about Chanukah might have a din of hegdish, might have kedusha to it. But let's say Maaser Rishon, for example. Who do we give Maaser Rishon to? Who? Wait a minute, Tom. He's prejudiced here. He's got an agenda. Don't worry. We'll give you a lot of matanos. We'll give you 24 different gifts, but we're not going to give you Maaser Rishon. Maaser Rishon goes to who? To the Levi. Does it have kedusha to it? Can I take Maaser Rishon into the bathroom? Pardon the expression. Maaser Rishon is chulin. It doesn't have kedusha. Maaser Sheni might have a din of kedusha to it, but not Maaser Rishon. And Hegdesh for sure has kedusha. So maybe the Torah is telling me that to steal something and make it into Hegdesh and bring it as a carbon, that's unacceptable. But a Cheftzah Shel Mitzvah, with all due respect, a Cheftzah Shel Mitzvah has, you know, what we do with tzitzis after, you know, after you take them off the beged, let's say they get a little bit unraveled, so we put it into what?
Geniza.
Right? You put it to Sheamus. That's a chumrah. That's a very nice chumrah. It's a minhag, you can do that. But technically speaking, once you remove the strings from the beged, it was a Cheftzah Shel Mitzvah. It's no longer a Cheftzah Shel Mitzvah. It has no sanctity to it. Who says that a Cheftzah Shel Mitzvah should be excluded under the law of an Avera? Avera is antithetical to a Karban, to a Hegdesh, but not necessarily to a Cheftzah Shel Mitzvah. So Tosis is really bothered by this question, and he feels compelled to prove to you who adin bechal mitzvos, that this psul of mitzvah bob avera is not limited to Hegdesh and to Karban, but applies universally to all mitzvahs. Dahavi doraisa. Again, we're talking about a mitzvah doraisa now. Kinemuchach. So what's kinemuchach? I have to prove it. Kinemuchach means if I don't prove it to you, then you be the devil's advocate. Fight me tooth and nail. It's like my brother used to say that he was in shir with Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha, and I think I may have told you the story. He used to fight a lot against Rav Aaron. He used to disagree with him all the time. So that group of students were very, very frum. And those are the frumas of YU. So they quoted my brother one day and they said, Hananya, you're sitting at the footsteps of a gadol b'Torah. How can you argue with him all the time? So my brother turned white. He got really nervous. So he came over to Rav Aaron the next day. So Rav Aaron said to him, when I come in here and say Torah, you assume that everything I tell you is false until I can prove to you it's true. That's what he said. I'm not going to say that to you about my Torah, because I'll be in deep trouble. You know what I'm saying? But Tosfos says, kinemuchach. You know, you have a right to disagree with me in this case and argue that the psul of mitzvah bob avera on a deraisal level only applies, is limited to what? Karban. It doesn't apply beyond the four cubits of Karban. How do I know what a chutzpah is on my part to say who I did b'chol ha-mitzvahs? K'demuchach b'reish ha-gozel kam. So we're deep, deep into Masechet Bava Kama now, and we're learning the laws of Gzela. And one of the issues of Gzela is Shinui. What's Shinui?
Change.
Can you give me an example? Let's say, for example, the man...
Changes.
Yeah, the man steals
wood.
Wheat. Okay. Okay, wood. Okay, makes it into a table. But let's take the case of wheat, because then we'll be closer home to the Gemara. So he steals wheat, raw grains. And then he... how do you say, he grinds it and he makes a flour out of it and he changes it in every way, then he bakes it as a bread, right? So if he's a gazlan, the question is, was he kone b'shinui? What does that mean, he's kone b'shinui? Again, he's going to have to pay for the bread that he stole, or at least the grains that he stole. Maybe the bread is worth more than the grains, but he has to pay for the grains, but he doesn't have to return the grains because he was kone b'shinui. Now the Gemara wants to know whether or not that halach of shinui means that the object is gone, so to speak. In other words, now it's panim chadoshes polukam. We have a new object that replaces and substitutes for the original object. Would that be enough to undermine the mitzvah of chal? So take, for example, the following case. If a man steals wheat, correct? He steals raw wheat in its natural state, and then he grinds it, makes a flour, he bakes it as a bread, and now he wants the mafresh challah from this bread. He wants to make a bracha, asher kinshanu mitzvos tzivanu al afroshes challah. The only problem is that in order to fulfill a mitzvah, it cannot be a mitzvah bav avera. This issue about whether he could fulfill the mitzvah of challah on stolen grains would depend upon our question. Does mitzvah bav avera apply to all mitzvahs, or does it only apply to karban? Challah is a very, very fine mitzvah, with all due respect, but it's not a karban. So now we want to see a Gemara Bava Kama on Daf Tzadik Daled, and see, does the Gemara apply the principle of mitzvah Bava Vera to the mitzvah Chala? If it does, then we have a right to assume that we're no longer straitjacketed to limit the principle of mitzvah Bava Vera to Karban. We can go beyond Karban, and Chala now becomes a paradigm for all mitzvahs. So what happens in the Gemara? Gabi means, but the case is the following case. Harisha Gozal Sa'a Shel Chitin. He stole a certain volume of grains. V'tochna, and he ground it up. V'afa'a, and he baked it. And then v'hifrish mimenu chal. By the way, not only did this gazlan mafrish chala, he's very frum. You know, he's mafrish chala, and he makes a bracha on the chala. So the Gemara says, "Ein ze mevarech ela menayitz." This is based on a pasuk in Tehillim, which the Gemara quotes. I don't have a Gemara Bava Kama in front of me, but you'll trust me that it's a pasuk in Tehillim. Botzeh berach niyetz Hashem. Excellent. I didn't know. I knew you were Balkori. I didn't know you're also Baki in Tanakh. Okay. Botzeh berech niyetz Hashem. And the Gemara says, therefore, it's blasphemy, so to speak. It's niyutz for a person to steal something and then make a bracha on a mitzvah challah after he stole the grains from someone. And the Gemara wants to prove in that particular sugya, because the sugya there is not, you know, it's not totally focused on mitzvah bav avera, so to speak. I mean, mitzvah bav avera comes in here in order to understand why his mitzvah of hafrashas challah is completely blasphemy. It's completely antithetical. But the ikar sugya, the primary focus of that Gemara, is whether shinu is kone gzela. The Gemara is assuming the following analogy. if Shinui is Konen Gzela, then it's no longer Mitzvah Baba Vera. Meaning, if Shinui is enough to clinch the acquisition of the Chitim in this case on behalf of the Gazlan, such that the Gazlan no longer is, can be, we can no longer demand that the Gazlan return the Chitim, because the Chitim already have changed their shape, that's called Shinui. Then the Gemara thinks that should be enough to obliviate, to completely undermine the psul of Mitzvah Baba Vera, because Mitzvah Baba Vera applies to one object, namely the Chitim that he stole, but that object is no longer around. Haraya, the Gazlan, stole it and he keeps it for himself. So the Gemara wants to suggest that the very fact that Mitzvah Baba Vera does apply in this case, and therefore Ein Zeh Berach Ela Nietz, that he's doing a terrible thing by making a bracha on Nafrash's Chala because it's Mitzvah Baba Vera and his Mitzvah Chala is worthless, you see clearly that Shinui Lo Kona, Eino Kona. Right, because if Shinui is Kona, then to the same extent that the Gazlan can no longer be, you know, can't claim against the Gazlan, well, give back the object is gone, you can no longer say, well, it's a Mitzvah Baba Avera, the Avera was done in this object, the object has changed its tsura, its state, its identity, it's completely a new object. Satosis says that you see clearly from the Gemara Bava Kama that the psul of Mitzvah Baba Vera that undermines and cancels his Mitzvah of Chala applies not just to what? To Karban, but also to other Averas. And if it applies to Chala representing other Averas, then we should apply it here to the case of Lulav HaGos. Which again brings Tosis back to his point. So why did Gemara on Daf Mem Gimel say that Lachem excludes Gozel? The answer is no. I don't need Lachem to exclude Gozel because Gozel is excluded on the Mitzvah Baba Vera. That's the Dorais Halacha. I need Lachem to exclude Shaul, because in the case of Shaul there was no Avera. It's only possible because of the absence of Lachem of ownership. And all that is Doraisa. Now let me ask you a ridiculous question, but then I want to lead up to a more serious question. Okay, Tosis proves that in the case of Chala, the Mitzvah of Chala, there's a psul called Mitzvah Baba Vera. I grant you that. It's a very stark proof, it's very convincing. But maybe the psul of Mitzvah Baba Vera applies in two cases. Maybe it applies to Karban and to Chala. Why does Tosis assume, and he's totally convinced with all certainty, that Chala represents all mitzvahs? Maybe Chala is also an exception to the rule. And in fact, the Pasuk says, Birech Nietz Hashem. You know, maybe the Pasuk is referring to Hafrash's Chala. Maybe Chala also has a separate status. So I think that's a ridiculous question. I'll tell you why. Because Karban is special because of what?
Kedusha.
Of Kedusha. It's something that's brought on the Mizbeach. That gives it a special status. But in the case of Chala is representative of any classical mitzvah. You can't just say, well, the Gemara is applying Mitzvah Baba Vera to Karban and now to Chala, but only to Karban and Chala. Well, why would Chala deserve a special status? But here I want to ask you a different question. I think this question is much more powerful. Let's assume, for argument's sake, like Tosfos Shita on Daf Tes, that Mitzvah Baba Vera is only Dirabon. What is the nature of a mitzvah of bracha? How would you classify bracha? Right, we have the first Masechta in Shas, Masechta Brachas. I mean, there are many different subjects in that Masechta, it's not limited to brachas. You have Kriyat Shema, and you have Tefillah, and many other mitzvahs that are Doraisa. But brachos per se is only what? Only Darabonim. The whole institution of brachos is only Darabonim. The Gemara says so explicitly in Masechta Brachos on Daf Tes Vav. The Gemara says that Eina brachos ma'akvos sam mitzvah. If you omitted the bracha, then you still fulfill the mitzvah. Okay, you're missing the mitzvah Darabonim of bracha. Birchas ha mitzvah. There is one bracha. That's the Oraisa. Berkat HaMazon. There the Torah says, but don't get confused. Birkas Hamazon is not the rule, but rather
exception.
The exception to the rule. The rule is that brachos are derabon. There may be one other bracha that's d'oraisa. Exactly, Birkas HaTorah. Kishem Hashem Ekra Havugol Elokeinu. But even that shouldn't confuse you, because that too is an exception to the rule rather than the rule. The rule of thumb is that if a person is being mafresh kala, then he can fulfill that mitzvah 1,000% on a d'oraisa level without making a bracha. The entire enterprise of a bracha is only d'rabbanan. So my question to you is as follows. Tosis invokes a sugi bava kama to prove that mitzvah baba vera is d'oraisa. I don't see anything in that Gemara in bava kama. The Gemara in bava kama says, ein zeh birech ele menayetz. You know, you want to make a bracha to Hashem on stolen flour, you know, stolen bread. That you mafrish b'chal. That's a problem with the bracha. You follow me? How does Tosfos extrapolate from Hilchos brachos? Again, if Tosfos wants to prove to me that there's such a thing called mitzvah bo b'avera, and therefore to make a bracha and fulfill a mitzvah of birchas achala with the stolen grains, that's not acceptable. Okay, so it's not acceptable. You can't make a bracha and fulfill the mitzvah of a bracha with mitzvah bav aver. But Tosis wants to prove something much more far-reaching, namely that mitzvah bav aver is a doraisa locha. So because the Gemara undermines the validity of a bracha in the case of stolen goods, that proves that the psul of mitzvah bav aver is doraisa. Li'olam, I would say, no. Mitzvah bav aver is only derabbanan. And don't laugh at me, because that's the sheet of Tosis on Daf Tes. The Gemara says in Bava Kama that we cannot tolerate this guy who steals. He steals grains and then he makes it as bread, and then he makes a bracha on the bread. The answer is the Gemara is focused on the bracha, and the Gemara says to make a bracha and thank Hashem for the opportunity to do a mitzvah which you set up through an avera of stealing. That's called nibs. That's called blasphemy. That's not a bracha. Okay, so in the mitzvah derabbanan of bracha, we have halacha. The mitzvah bav avera cannot tolerate a bracha. But does that mean, therefore, that mitzvah bav avera undermines the mitzvah itself on a doraisa level? Does anybody feel for my pain over here? So let's go back to basics. I told you before that the Gemara Bava Kama is not interested really in Mitzvah Bava Vera. Mitzvah Bava Vera comes in through the back door. The real issue is whether Shinu is Kone in Gzela, meaning when a Gazan steals something and he changes it, he does a radical change in the very substance and the makeup of the object, is he able to acquire ownership on it such that now he only has to return its value, its money and currency, but not the original object. And the Gemara is a proof that Shinui ain't Kona. And what's the proof? Because if Shinui would be Kona, then you would be Yotze the mitzvah of Hafrashas Chala. Forget about the fact that he stole the grains. The grains is history, right? They no longer exist. Instead, he has a loaf of bread. And he made a bracha on the bread. And on the hafrashas chal of the bread. Oh, so now I have to ask you the question: was he yotzei the mitzvah of chala? If the Gemara thinks that the problem here is the bracha, but not the mitzvah per se, I'm saying from my the perspective, of my question that I asked on Tosfos. Then what does that prove about Shinu Kona? Well, Shinu Lo Kona, actually. The Gemara wants to prove that Shinu ain't no Kona. Why? The Gemara doesn't say a word about the mitzvah of Chal here. The Gemara says that the bracha is considered nius. Ein ze berach ele nuts. Okay, that's a bracha issue. To make a bracha and thank Hashem for, so to speak, the opportunity to do this mitzvah, that you can't do. Does that prove that Shinui ain't a Kona? I'm going to argue the following. Shinui is Kona. Okay, Shinui is Kona. He changed the whole structure here. And if Shinui is Kona, Enochinami, he has a mitzvah challah, but he doesn't have a bracha. In Hilchas Brachos, we have an objection. We cannot accept a bracha on stolen material. So how does that prove that Shinui ain't a Kona? The answer must be that what's at stake here is not just the bracha, but the mitzvah challah itself. And the Gemara holds like this. Would you be able to fulfill the mitzvah challah with stolen grains that you converted into lechem? And the answer is it depends. If I hold Shinui Konin Gzela, Shinui ain't a Konin Gzela. If Shinui is Konin Gzela, then what we have here is a brand new object. And on this lechem, I have a chiyuv and a mitzvah of hafrashas challah. If on the other hand, Shinui ain't a Konin, that means that we still have the old grains, they still exist, they're there to haunt us. We haven't completely transformed the object into something new. If you've ever read Kafka, it's not metamorphosis. There's no metamorphosis here. Right? So the answer is, I still have the original object. I'm still the original object, and I have the mitzvah of challah. In other words, the Gemara understood that the reason why the bracha is disqualified is because there's no mitzvah. It's not halach in Hilchas Brachas. It's halach in the mitzvah. You can't make a bracha on something that doesn't qualify as a mitzvah. You see, when I asked my question to you, I thought, well, you know what? Bracha l'chud and mitzvah l'chud. You know, the mitzvah stands on its own. And if you're not even mekayim the mitzvah of challah, but we have a problem in bracha. And that's the mitzvah bob aver. But if it's only the mitzvah bob aver in bracha, then there's no proof that mitzvah bob aver is a psul d'oraisa. We must be assuming that mitzvah bob aver disqualifies the mitzvah of challah. And that's why the bracha is completely meaningless. And how do I know that the Gemara is disqualifying the mitzvah of challah? Because otherwise, if it's only halach and bracha, it has no relevance to the sugya of kinyan gazla. To prove one way or the other whether a gazla is kona b'shinui based on halach and bracha, this makes no sense at all. If you want to ask me, can I fulfill the mitzvah of challah? So the question is, do I still have the original, that's the Avera, the stolen Chitim, or do I now have Lechem, and it's a new entity? And that's going to determine whether I could be Mafresh Challah, because Mitzvah Bob Avera is Doraisa. And now I can determine whether a Gazlan is Kona Bishinu. From the fact that this is Mitzvah Bob Avera, means the Avera still comes and haunts me, the original Chitim are still very much alive and well, that proves that in Gazlan, Shinui ain't a Kona. So if a man steals Chitim, and ultimately he converts it into bread, he has to return the bread. Because Shinui ain't a Kona. Just like in the case of Mitzvah Bob Aver, the mitzvah is completely undermined. And the reason for that is because we still have in front of us, I mean, if you look carefully under the coating of the bread into the fibers, we still have in front of us a stolen chitim. And since we have stolen chitim, that undermines the mitzvah because it's a mitzvah bob avera. And that proves that Shinui ain't no kona of gzela. But if I would hold that Shinui is kona of gzela, then I would have to assume that he could fulfill the mitzvah of challah, because forget about the old history, you know, of the original stolen chitim. Those stolen chitim don't exist anymore. Tosa says, "V'im tomar lekamon de paslin and lulav shel ashera v'shel ira nidachas." The Gemara later on is going to establish that ashera and ira nidachas is posel mishum de michtas shiure. Right, and that means that we have to burn it, and therefore it doesn't have a shiur. Why does Gemara need that? Typically, let's derive from mishum mitzvah baba vera. And again, this is all based on the assumption of Tosis that Mitzvah Bob Aver is the Oraisa. If it was only Drabbanon, then Tosis has no kasha, because Kitusei Mechta Shiura, to undermine the minimum Shia, that's a Doraisa. So for sure, the Gemara wants to tell you why this is possible Doraisa in the case of Asherah. But now that we've elevated, we've upgraded the psul of mitzvah baba ver to a doraisa level, that's shita satos siradaf lamed. Therefore, Tosa has a very good argument here. Why did the Gemara need to introduce the psul of kitusei mechta shiura? Why not just fall back on the old psul of mitzvah baba ver? Okay, there's another line here which we'll have to leave out for now until we get to the sugya daf lamed aleph amin beis. V'yesh lomar. Okay, Rabosai, here we have to tune in. This is the revolution of Tosis. The first revolution was that mitzvah bo baver is doraisa, not just in karbon but in all mitzvah. V'yesh lomar delo dami. The case of asherah is not similar to a lulav agazel case. Why? Lo dami legezel. What's unique about gezel that makes it a mitzvah baba avera? De machmas averas hagezel ba hamitzvah. Do you remember the word that we used yesterday? Was it yours, Rabbi? I think it was your word. Causative, right? Causative. That's called machmas. Machmas means as a result of. So as a result of an avera of gezel, you were able to achieve this mitzvah. Sheyotzebo. Now he can fulfill the mitzvah because he stole the lulav. Seems to be assuming he has no other lulav. I don't know what the din would be according to Tosis. He has two lulav and one is stolen and one is not. I don't know. We have to take that up under a separate category. But right now, let's assume he has only one lulav. Avalhani, but in the case of Asherah, and Irani Dachas, Otu, he asks as a rhetorical question, Otu Machmas Averinase Spo Minofik? Is he only able to fulfill his mitzvah because of the Avera? The Avera here is totally coincidental. It's an overlap. It happens to be that in this lulav, we have a history of a criminal record in this lulav, it was worship. But that criminal record in no way contributes to the ability of him to do the mitzvah of lulav. In the case of Gzela, that's called mitzvah haba'a ba'aver. What does haba'a mean? It's a result of. That's when we say mitzvah ba'aver. So for example, in the Gemara itself, he stole an animal, and then he was able to be magdish the animal and bring it on the mizbeach. That's called a mitzvah haba'a ba'aver. That's unique to Gzela. In the case of the Gemara Bava Kama, how did he get access to these chitim from which he baked the bread and he was mafresh challah? Through stealing. So the theft set up the mitzvah, and the mitzvah would have been impossible without the theft. But that psul of mitzvah baba varing zela should not be extended to the case for nashera. It doesn't mean that any time that the object was used for an avera, that passels the object. That's not what mitzvah baba vera means. It's not the fact that they worship this lulav that completely disqualifies the lulav forevermore under the law of Asherah. No. Mitzvah baba vera is a psul in the mitzvah, meaning the mitzvah came through an avera. You can't just look at the object and say, well, wait a minute, an avera was done to this object, therefore it's excluded from a mitzvah. You have to start with the mitzvah. You start with the mitzvah and you ask yourself, well, what set up that mitzvah? What facilitated that mitzvah? If what made it possible was an avera, that's called mitzvah baba avera. But don't look at an object in and of itself and say, well, this is going to be possible for a mitzvah. Why? Because an avera was done. The fact that the avera was done with this object or to this object is purely coincidental. It doesn't change the ability or the qualification of this object for use for a mitzvah. So this is the radical breakthrough of Tosfos. This, by the way, really severely limits the principle of mitzvah baba avera. I mean, I don't even know if in my imaginative mind, if I had one, I could come up with another case other than Zela. Where else do you have a case where it's not gzela, the avera set up the mitzvah? It's very hard to come up with such a case. Later on, Tosfos is going to say a case where this food, this matzah that he wants to eat on the Leil HaPesach is teva, because he didn't take off trumas and maisros. Yeah, but I wouldn't say that the tevel itself sets up the mitzvah of matzah. Again, it's the cheft itself was used for an avera. It's tevel. But that doesn't in any way make the object into a mitzvah object, meaning it's not that the mitzvah came through the avera. He could have done that mitzvah even had he not done the avera of tevel. Then
this only works because we're not talking in the world of kedusha. Like, for instance, you could offer a korban in which the animal had been an act of dava, an animal and pasul to be kadosh. No, this only works outside of the world of.
Yes, you mean like esnan zona or nirva?
Yeah, but you couldn't use
right. There are many psuli korban which are a result of an avera, even though that avera is totally coincidental to that akravas korban. It's not like because of the avera he was able to bring this korban.
But since you introduced the world of kedusha, it cannot be made hekdesh.
My kedusha allows me to look at the object and ask myself if this object could lend itself to kedusha, and if the object was done in a certain kind of an avera, which makes it into
produces a mum in the animal.
Correct, it produces like a mum in the animal. But that's not what we're saying as far as other mitzvahs is concerned. As far as other mitzvahs is concerned, I just have to ask one question: look at that mitzvah and answer me. Did that mitzvah become possible, become feasible because of an avera? I'm not looking at the object and saying, well, the object is despicable, because we're not dealing with kedusha in mitzvah. So we just have to know if the mitzvah came through an avera. However, we have one serious problem here, because the Gemara is going to tell us in Masechta Pesachim that if he eats matzah's tevel, he's not yotzei the mitzvah of matzah.
So that's another definition, though.
Oh, so that's going to have to introduce a whole new definition of mitzvah bab avera. Meaning, again, until we see the next revolution of Tosus, in which he breaks new ground, if all we have in front of us, Ein L'dayin Elamash Ein Avros, it's only what we have on the table here, namely, it's got to be a mitzvah that was set up by the Avera, then we really don't understand the Gemara Pesachim. The Gemara Pesachim wants to say that if you eat a matzah of Tevel, that's called mitzvah bab Avera, and that negates the mitzvah of matzah. Why should that be so? The Avera of Tevel did not set up the mitzvah. So again, we're going to have to break new ground and create a new category of mitzvah bab Avera. But as long as we only have one category of mitzvah bab Avera, namely that the mitzvah is ba machmas Avera, then I can't think of any other example other than Gzela. I don't know, my imaginative mind couldn't come up with anything.
We have a lot of things with Gzela.
Correct.
You could exula, super exula.
Excellent. So that's okay. But you know, there's a whole bunch of averus in the Torah. I think there are 365 or something. I don't know how many there are, but there's a lot. And I can't think of another avera which would passel a mitzvah under the law of mitzvah of avera than gzela. I don't know. I'm hard pressed to come up with it until Tosus's next, his next breakthrough. Now at this point, Rabosai, I want to take a little bit of a detour, if I can, and look at a Yushalmi. I photocopied the Yushalmi. Do you happen to have any copies of that Yushalmi? It's only a few lines in the Yushalmi, so in the worst case scenario, I have one extra copy here that you can take. Just let me know what page it's on so I can make it find it in the original. Okay. All right. So the Gemara here is dealing with a mitzvah called Kriya. But again, if I was a Yemenite, I would pronounce it properly. Or even if I was a Sephardi, I would probably be able to carry. Because we're not talking about Kriya with an olive, but Kriya with an ayin. How do you pronounce it? You know how to do it? Without the dying of
Kriya.
Okay. Not Ta'abis Ochein, right? Not Ta'abis Ochein. So the issue here in the Gemara and Shabbos is obviously a Shabbos issue. And he did the Kriya on Shabbos. Now Kriya is one of the 39 Malachas. Again, the issue here might be whether it's Mekalkel or whether it's Mesakin. Is that called creative? Is it constructive or is it destructive? None of that is relevant to our discussion. But what's relevant to our discussion is that the Gemara assumes that if you do the Kriya on Shabbos, you yotzei the mitzvah of Kriya. Which means that on Sunday we're not going to require you to do a repeat performance and replace the first Kriya with a second Kriya. So the top line of the Yushalmi that you should have in front of you says the following. Okay, on the end of the prime line, it says, "Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimba Yochai." And now we're up to the Matzah Gzula Eini Yotzi Yedecho Vaso BePesach. So if you steal a matzah, it's disqualified. And a mitzvah, if you went ahead and ate that matzah on Pesach, would be worthless. And therefore, the Gemara is asking the following question. Since this Kriya on Shabbos entailed an Avera of Meleches Kriya, we're assuming that it was Mesaken, which again is complicated. I'll just throw out one idea, but please don't ask me any questions on this, because this would take us way off the mark.
What is Kriya in this case?
Kriya means to rip your clothes if you lost one of your clothes, one of your close relatives. Okay. So I'll just tell you this. There's a sheet of Tosfos that an Ovel is not allowed to wear clothes unless they're ripped. Mm-hmm. So your clothes now, if you're Rachman Litzlan, you're an Ovel, are not, shall I say, wearable. Is there such a word as wearable? So this is called a tikkun. Why? Because as a result of Kriya, he's going to wear what's called a Beged Karua. Don't ask me any questions, because this is a whole other...
We discussed this last year in Shabbos.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm very impressed. Yeah. Okay. But this Yushalmi we didn't discuss. The Yushalmi wants to know, even if I grant you that the Kriya, with an ayin, of ripping his garments, in this case, is a tikkun, it's a constructive act, it's a mitzvah, and it also allows him to wear the beged and so forth. But why is it any different than a matzah gzula? If a person steals a matzah, he's not yotze the mitzvah of matzah when he eats that matzah. And that's called mitzvah ba'avera. So if you take a look here in the car, there's a carbon edo on the top left, there's a bnei moshe on the top right. Is mitzvah matzah gzula and yotze yedei chovasu v'pesach l'fishe ba'avera ba. As a result of the avera, he has fulfilled the mitzvah of matzah. Im kein, since we know that matzah gzula and yotze ba yedei chovasu kein hu adin, the same law should apply, v'kriya b'shabbos, lo yehei yotze yedei chovasu. How did he achieve his goal of Mitzvah Kriya? He had to have violated the Isur, the Malach of Kriya. So the Aver itself is absolutely Muchach. It means it has to be. There's no way of fulfilling Kriya on Shabbos as a mitzvah without violating Kriya. And if that be the case, it's the same as this guy who stole a matzah, and he has to, in order to fulfill his mitzvah matzah, he's got to steal the matzah. There, in the case of matzah, we disqualify the mitzvah. Here, we're going to say that he fulfills his mitzvah kriya on Shabbos, despite the fact that he violated Melech HaShabbos, and he doesn't have to replace this kriya with a second kriya. Does everybody hear the Gemara's kasha? This is the Yerushalmi's kasha. So I'm very excited about this Yerushalmi, because it really begins to allow us to focus on the...
Especially according to Tosis' second answer. They're coming at the same time.
Excellent. But I would say, Rabbi, and tell me if you agree with me, that even in Tosis' first definition, there's no way, no how, that you could have gotten to the mitzvah of Kriya without Kriya. Because the Kriya itself is necessary.
Machmat.
Correct, it's Machmat. It's Machmat Averis Kriya. Well, no. Can anybody slug that out? It's not really Machmat, it's the Avera of Kriya, right? It
doesn't become a Chetza of...
In other words, in the case of Gzela, how would I physically take this lulav or eat this matzah if I didn't steal it? I don't have any other matzah. In the case of Kriya, the same Kriya I could have done on Sunday. The fact that it overlaps with Shabbos is purely coincidental. That's why I think what the rabbi said before is correct. So let's put the Yerushalmi on the side for just a minute and look at the end of our Tosfos. And Tosfos says, Umiyu Tema, in the last four lines of Tosfos, says, Beperek Kol Shah, the Tanya Eini Yotzi De Matzah B'Tevel. Vidarishla Mikra. So the Gemara says that based on a certain pasuk, we're going to derive that matzah shel tevel is asur, because The Gemara has what's called a gzer shav between matzah and chametz. And just like in chametz is only an iser chametz, so too in matzah there could be only the possibility of one iser of chametz if you would have left it to ferment. But here it would have been also in any event, even regardless of chametz, because it's tevel. In any event, the Gemara says that you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of matzah with matzah's tevel based on yalfusa. So Tos says, tepiklei mishum mitzvah baba vera. Now, wait a minute, what do you mean mishum mitzvah baba vera? How is that different than the Asherah case? Tosis just finished saying that Asherah is not a mitzvah baba vera. It's only possible because of ketuseh mechta shiura. Why? Because it's purely coincidental. It wasn't the avera of avodah zarah that caused the mitzvah of lulav. And here, it's not the avera of devil that causes the mitzvah of matzah. Well, the answer is the ka'achel isura v'nafik bet yidei matzah. In other words, that the very same maisa mitzvah is really a maisa avera. In other words, how do you fulfill the mitzvah of matzah? There's only one possibility. You need what? Achila, right? You need an achila. There's no mitzvah. It says, ba'erev toklu matzah. So you agree with me? There's no way of fulfilling the mitzvah of matzah without achila. Now that achila itself, by definition, since it's tevel, is an achila of an avera. So if your maisa mitzvah is in itself a maisa avera, that's called mitzvah baba avera. Now let's go back to the Yerushalmi. He rips his clothing on Shabbos. That act is an act of a mitzvah of kriya, but it's also an act of an avera of violating the Shabbos.
Do we know if he did it b'shogeg, b'mezi?
Oh, that's an excellent question.
All right. So
all right, so I'll have to defer that question for a few minutes. Hopefully I'll get to it. But don't forget the question. So what is the Yerushalmi answer? You're not going to believe it. To answer this question, the Yerushalmi uses two words. That's it. Amulon Taman Gufa Avera. The words are Gufa and Avera. Amulon, he said to us, Taman, what we have in front of us, in the case of Gzela, is Gufa and Avera. Gufa Avera. Rabbosa, it's hard for me to understand this, Yerushalmi. It's hard for me to even translate the Yerushalmi. Now, I looked in the Karban Eda. And he says, Taman Gabi Gezel, that's the case of Gezel, is Gufa Avera. That's not similar to the case of Kriya. Why? HaMitzvah Atzma he Avera. Shkoyach. So instead of the word Gufa, he translated to Atzma. That's all he does for the Karban Eda. The Pnei Moshe doesn't do much beyond that either. So please underline these words. HaMitzvah Atzma, this is the case of Gezel, he avera. So instead of gufa, he has atzma. Shel moli lo gazla, lo hayachal levarech aleu, lekayim ha-mitzvah. I don't know why he introduces the bracha here. Ubamesha achla, naseis ikar avera. Sheinu yachal lekayim mitzvos, mitzvahs veheishiv esagzela shar gazla. There's a whole complicated arichus here in the Karban Eda. Let's take a look at the Pnei Moshe, see if he does anything better for us. Three lines now for Tablo Damya. It's not similar. No, it's Kriya is not similar to the case of Matzah Gzula. The Taman HaMatzah Gufa Avera He would be Avera Ba'alo. Aval Hocha Hu She'ovar Avera Shechil Shabbos. V'ein HaKriya Gufa Avera. Whoa. This gives me a little clue. John, what do you see here? Do you see here something here? You're not going to believe this, but I would just bold one word in the Pnei Moshe on the fourth line, the word who. Does anybody know what the word who means? Can you substitute a brisket terminology for the word who?
The
gavra, right. Who is the gavra in this case? And atzma, or gufa, is the chefta. And I think what the Gemara is saying here is that when you steal something, the object itself is stolen. But in the case of Kriya, there's nothing in the object that generates the Avera. The Avera is in the Gavra that he violates the Shabbos by doing a Malacha. So Isuri Shabbos, and we know of 39 of them with all their subcategories, those are Isuri Gavra. But Gzela is an Iser in the Chefza. So now it turns out that according to Yushalmi, if he wants to take the Matzah Gzula and use it for a mitzvah, the Matzah Gzula is disqualified. It's possible. Why? Because the Gzela is inherent in the object. It becomes a Matzah Gzula. In the case of Kriya, although I admit that the person, the Gavra, who of Aras Avera, Shechil HaShabbos, but the Kriya itself is not Gufa Avera. It's almost as if he uses the Beged as an instrument, as a means to violate the Shabbos. But it's not that he's doing an object on the Beged itself that generates a Shem Avera on the Beged. You know, this the Beged is an averidic beged. The aver is not in the beged. There's nothing inherent. The aver is not inherent. It doesn't generate new status, new dinim in the beged itself. The beged remains the same identical beged as it was before, except it's ripped. But he violated the Shabbos. Ah, that's not mitzvah bob aver. Mitzvah bob aver disqualifies the object because the aver is inherent in the object. So now we have, let's say we come back to Gzela. So we have Gzela. Then we have the case of Tevel. Tevel is also in the object. So the Tevel itself is what we call a Cheftza di Sura. And to take a Cheftza di Sura and use it for an Avera, that we can't do. But in the case of Kriya, right? So what did I say? I meant to say for the mitzvah. I'm sorry. For the mitzvah, that we can't do. Now let's see if...
Yeah, so the outcome is that the Kriya is different from the last, from Tevel.
Well, from Tevel and Gzela, right.
Tevel is a Chefza Shel Iser.
Tevel is a Chefza Shel Iser. Gzela generates a din in the Chefza that it's Gazel.
But by Kriya, it's not.
Correct.
It's the Gavra who did the...
Correct. But Ram, however, in contrast, says the Yushalmi, Hacha, here in the case of Kriya, who of our Avera? He violates the Avera. But the Avera is not intrinsic, it's not inherent in the object. The Beged itself is not a Chefta di Surah, a Chefta shal Avera. Oh. And now the Yushalmi wants to prove it. I'm going to prove that this distinction between the Chefta and the Gavra is correct. Why? Kachani Omer. I certainly would say the following. Or, you know what? Sometimes you have to read it with an inflection of a question, meaning it becomes Kachani Omer means I'm going to tell you something that's absolutely ridiculous, meaning I'm going to ask it almost as a question. It's a rhetorical question. Kachani Omer. Would you ever entertain the following idea that Hotzi Matzah Mirshus HaYochid Lishus HaRabim is Eini Yotzi VaYidecho Voso BePesach? Brilliant. Look what he says. It's Shabbos and it's Pesach. Correct? Now the mitzvah of Matzah applies on Shabbos as well. Correct? Which is a question why that's so. You know, we have if Lulav this year it's not a problem, I don't think. But some years it's quite common. The first day of Sukkot is on Shabbos, so we don't take the lulav. Or if the first day of or if Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbos, we don't blow the shofar. Correct? But in matzah, even if the first day of Pesach coincides with Shabbos, we do eat the matzah. Okay, that's a question unto itself, not for us now. Now, what happens if on Shabbos of Pesach he's got a matzah in your house, and he has to carry it to his house, and he carries it through what? A Rosh Hashanah. He's Eini Yotzi Dechovasa V'Pesach. He asks it with a question mark. He says, "Could it be? We never heard such a thing." Look at the Karban Eidah about 10 lines down from the top. Kachani Omer V'Chuli Vitmiya V'Chi Kachani Omer. Would I ever say such a thing? If I said such a thing, you would throw me out because it would be absolutely incorrect. Shim hotzi matzah shesayot shesarab lo yotzi yedei chovasa v'pesah. Ella, but rather dafka v'matzah gzula amrina. Then we say mitzvah baba v'ira. Al karchach lechalei k'mo shamarti. What's the difference between taking matzah from one rishus to another rishus and violating melechas hotzah on Shabbos? And yet you can be yotzi the mitzvah of matzah with eating this matzah, as opposed to the case of gzua. It must be that gezel is different. Why? Because hotzah ain't avera begufa. What does it mean, ain't avera begufa? The chetz of the matzah. The matzah has no status of avera to it. I'm just using the matzah to violate hotzah. But there's no inherent shtempel, you know, there's no chotemet in the matzah that's an averidika matzah. He used the matzah to violate the Shabbos. He said, Hasam ain't avera begufa. And the same thing we're going to apply in which case? Kriya, right? That Kriya is only, I'm using the beged to violate the Kriya, but there's nothing inherent in the beged. But gzela, avera begufa. Gzela is called an avera begufa. Or as he says it, the atzma, meaning atzma in the object itself.
So now, the legal status of the matzer and the lulav has changed if it's stolen. But nothing's happened to the lulav and the matzer in and of itself. So my carrying
physically.
So carrying the matzah from through the
Rosh
Harabin, nothing's changed, right? And if I steal Ben's lulav, nothing's changed in the lulav or his matzah. So from that point of view, I don't agree with
that. That's what we would have said before the Yishalvi. Counsel along the Yishalvi and says something mind-boggling. That there are new dinim that are generated in the object. For example, forget about Mitzvah Avera. What din does this object carry with itself as a result of Gzeila? I'm asking. I want to prove to you that the Avera of Gzeila changes something inherent in the object, even though physically you don't see it. But legally, it changes the object.
Becomes puzzle.
That's what I'm going to try to prove. But how do I get there? You know, you're at the end of the tunnel. I'm just trying to get to the end of the tunnel, right? I'm groping through the dark here in this dark tunnel. There's no light in the tunnel. So I'm asking you, how can I prove to you and convince you beyond the shadow of doubt that legally this object has changed its status? It's called a cheftz ha-gozel. Mitch?
That's lulav ha-gozel.
No, again, lulav ha-gozel is what I want to... That's where I want to get to at the end of the tunnel. That to prove to you that mitzvah bob avera, as Yerushalmi says, is ha-gufa avera. But how do I know? I mean, Don is saying, why does Yerushalmi say that it's gufa avera? What changed over here? Nothing changed. It's the exact same molecules. The molecular structure of the luluf has not changed, ki yuzeh, as a result of the gzela. Why is it different than taking a luluf from one rishus to the other rishus and violating hotzah shabbos? Why does Yerushalmi say no ha gufa avera? The atzma, that now the lulav has changed. It's a different lulav. The avera is now inherent in the lulav. The lulav carries a badge that says I am a stolen lulav, which is not the case in hotzah. When you take a lulav and you remove it from one rishus to another rishus on Shabbos, there's no badge on the cap of the lulav that says I am a hotzah dika lulav. The Hotzah doesn't change the lulav legally, but Gzela changes the lulav. How do I know that? How can I prove that?
But yeah, I thought one of the reasons why we don't do the lulav and blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is because of the concept of carrying.
Right, that's because we're afraid you might carry.
Right, but how is it any different than the matzah? You're carrying it from one...
We're not communicating. I'm asking you the following question. I'm going to give you a list of averis, and I'm going to ask you, is there one avera on my list where the object is changed as a result of the avera?
So I understand.
So I have, for example, I have the case of kriya, where he rips the garment. I have a case of hotzah, where he carries the garment. I have a case of gzela, where he steals the object. Okay? So now I'm asking you, if the Yerushalmi says that matzah gzula, why? Because ha-gufa avera. Right? Is that what it says in the Yerushalmi? Let me read it again. Gufa avera.
Does this go back to the causative?
No. What I'm asking is,
up to the Yerushalmi, I thought I understood. Now.
Right. So that's why I want you to have some patience.
Okay.
You have patience?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to try to convince you that on this long list of averos, there's one which changes the object, not physically, but legally. And that's gzeil. Any aver I do with an object, the object remains the same as it was before the aver. The object was only used as a kli, as a method, as a vessel, as a means to violate an aver. But nothing changed in the object. All the aver was done is in the person, not in the object.
Okay.
The only exception is going to be gzeil. Now, in order to convince you that that is correct, I have to show you one halacha which changes the nature of the object. In other words, as a result of the gzela, the object is called, is identified with a badge, guzzle. I am guzzle. What halacha can I quote? Again, we don't know yet about Mitzvah. Don't quote Lulavah guzzle, because that's not fair. That's where we want to get to at the end. But I want to show you that even before the concept of Mitzvah Avera, the Avera itself changes the nature of the object. Anybody? I'll quote to you the beginning of a pasuk, and you'll end the pasuk for me. Veheshiv es hagzeila sher gozal. There's a brand new mitzvah that emerges with regard to this because of the aver. Now, how can an aver generate a mitzvah? That doesn't make sense unless the aver changes the nature of the object legally, not physically. Where do I prove? How do I prove that a stolen object has new dinim to it, that its halachic status as an object has changed? The answer is now the object generates a mitzvah. And what's that mitzvah? The heshiv is like zeila asher gozal. Not only does it generate a mitzvah of heshiv is like zeila asher gozal, it generates dini mamonos. There are monetary laws that now apply to this lulav. We don't know if the nigzel could come in and take it back. And if it's chametz, maybe he'll violate by your own by matzah if it's stolen bread. We don't know if the gazlan can now make a kinyan on the object through shinui. And all these dinim, and you have to learn full masechtas and shas amongst the Bava Kama, they all emanate from one premise, that the object has changed its status through this aver of gzela. It's a stolen object. Now, would it be true to say that at one point in time, down the line, I can remove that change of status and it's no longer guzzle? And the answer might be shini. For example, if I hold shini kone, I stole chitim, natural in its natural state, wheat, and then I ground it up and I made it into a flour and I baked it and so forth, and now I have lechem. If shini is kone, it means it's no longer guzzle. The status of the object has changed.
Or yeush.
Yeush is also a possibility, but I wanted to give you more of a, what I call muhashi, how do you call it in English? Something that's sensual, that's tangible. I'm giving you a tangible analysis of this object. This is a stolen object, correct? Its status has changed as a result of gzeila. There are new dinim that apply. Question is who owns it, and when he owns it, this and that. Let's say I hold shini kone. I took this object, and somehow I made it into something totally different. If I hold shini kone, then now it no longer has the status. I've stripped it of its badge. It no longer has the identity of a stolen object.
So I could eat that matzah.
Exactly. And I could be yotze in the midst of matzah. Why? Because shini is kone. And that's what the Gemara says about challah. That if a man steals chitim, if I hold that shini is kone, if he makes it into bread, it's no longer gozel, and he's mekayim the mitzvah of hafrash
eschal. Why is the chal? Why is the matzah?
I say, if let's say shini would be kone, and I stole from you wheat, and I made it into matzah,
oh, okay.
If shini is kone, then I could be yotze in the mitzvah of matzah.
Okay.
Because it's all a result, it's all contingent on one issue, and that is the status of the object, the identity of the object. Or, again, if you want to use brisket terminology, the chal shen gozel in the object. Is there a Chal Shem Gozel? Well, yes, there was a Chal Shem Gozel, but that's history, it's gone. Why? Because of Shinui. Because we transformed the object, and the old object doesn't exist. Ben?
I was just going to say, using the matzah analogy, like I'm throwing in the metaphor of an innocent bystander. The matzah was moved from one domain to another, but it didn't affect the matzah. You can
correct.
Say
there's no impact on the matzah. There's no dinim whatsoever that were generated by that act of hotza.
But if it were stolen,
does not change the object ki huze.
However, if it were stolen, then that changes its essence. It's now a stolen
piece of stolen goods. And there are dinim in stolen goods, yet you have to return it. And unless you make a kinyan on it, it's not yours. And if you want to be magdishit, I don't know if you can be magdishit. You know, there are many, many dinim that apply to this object as a result of gzela. Gzela really changes the object in its legal history. Now it's got a new status. And Yerushalmi says that's called mitzvah bava avera. You want to use that for a mitzvah? You can't. Why? Because the avera, the shtempel, the name, the identity of the object as an avera is inherent in the matzah, and therefore you can't use it for a mitzvah. That's mitzvah bava avera according to the Yerushalmi. So if we summarize, we have the following: Tosis established that mitzvah bava avera number one only applies if the mitzvah was set up by the avera. It was machmas avera. Oh, let me ask you this, Don.
Yes.
If, let's say, somebody worships a tree, a lulav, right? He worshipped it. Has the object changed? Be careful, because I might be fooling you. But think about it twice. Has the object changed?
Say it again, it's what?
Physically, has the object changed? No.
Now, what was the question again?
No, I'm asking you. Reuven bowed down to a tree.
Oh, okay.
Has that tree changed, physically?
Yeah, because now...
No, physically. Has it changed physically?
No.
Has it changed halachically?
Yes, because
absolutely.
It's Avodah Zarah.
And what's the din of Avodah Zarah? What new laws apply to that tree as a result of the Avera?
Well, the laws of Avodah.
You're not allowed to benefit from that tree.
Right.
You have to burn the tree. All these dinims show you that Averas Avodah Zarah generates a change and a transformation in the object. The object changes its status, its very identity. So Tos says, if so, then an ashulul shal asher should be possible. Midin mitzvah bava avera. It's exactly similar to what the Yerushalmi says. Ha gufa avera. Avodah Zarah is gufa avera. And for Tosfot, there's a difference, because in gzela he couldn't fulfill his mitzvah of lulav without stealing the lulav. But an asherah, the violation of the asherah is not what sets up the lulav. And the mitzvah was not a result of the avera. But if not for that breakthrough in Tosis, I would have told you that a lulav shel asherah is a classical paradigm of mitzvah bava avera, because the avera is inherent in the object. It's fat. It's disgusting. It's repulsive. What other adjectives can I use? You get the point. Now, in the case of Tevel, which I want to use now for matzah, so I didn't steal this, it was mine. And here also, the Avera is in the Hefta, it's an Eastern Hefta, but once again, it's coincidental. So Tosus now says, but it's not coincidental. Why? Because I cannot fulfill this mitzvah of Achilas Matzah without violating Achilas Tevel. That makes it into mitzvah bava avera. But again, only if it's Taman Avera. As opposed to Kriya, with an ayin, right? Kriya, on Shabbos, or Hotzah on Shabbos. But Bosai, I'm going to take a little bit of a break and talk to you about something that's much easier to talk about. And that's the canary palm tree. What time is it?
4 minutes after.
So we still have 10 minutes or so? Okay. I have here a book, if I can find it. Where did I misplace it, of course?
You didn't misplace it.
Oh, here it is. This is called Arba Minim Lamahadrin. I call it the picture book. There are other books that have pictures, but I don't have access to them. This is the only one I have access to. So he starts the book by telling you that there are Asarot Sugei Dekalim. There are tens, if not hundreds, of species of date trees, palm trees.
No.
He says many of them grow lulavim. Some of them don't. But he says of those that do grow lulavim, of those dekalim, those species of dekalim that do grow lulavim, how many of them are kosher? And I thought they're all kosher, right? Because what do you have? You have number one a dekel, number two you have a lulav. Great. He says chelik min alulavim kshirim v'chelik psul. So the fact that you point to this tree and you tell me that this is a dekel tree and it's got lulavim coming out of its ears, that doesn't mean I could be yotze the mitzvah of lulav. That makes life very complicated because now we have to determine what is a lulav. When I say what is a lulav, we've been talking about dried up lulavim, headless lulavim, we talk about stolen lulavim. That's what we were discussing. But now we have to ask a more basic question. What is a lulav? It sounds like something Shakespeare would ask, right? So he says that a lulav has to look a certain way. It's not enough that it grows on a date tree, a palm tree. It's not enough that the tree produces dates, you know, it has fruits on it. He says, Kayom, in our day, here in Eretz Yisrael, we only have lulav trees, palm trees, producing kosher lulavs in four places. In Yericho, in Beit Shan, in Rafiach, and in the Jordan Valley. Interesting. So, for example, if you ever went down
Jordan Valley, I think it's Jordan.
Oh, that's what he means.
Wrong. Because talks about the other side of the Jordan.
I see. Okay, yeah. So maybe you're right. So let's take a look at this. Have you ever driven down to the Dead Sea and you get to a point where you have to make a right turn?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And all the palm trees.
Yeah, all the palm trees there. So I think he's saying that those are lulav trees. You'll see that they're very tall. You'll see they have dates on them. And they have lulavim coming out. Yeah, how you climb up that tree, I don't know. They must have certain machines that they use, I guess, right? It's like when they fix the robots, you know what I mean? The traffic lights.
That's interesting. My grandson just spent a year in a kibbutz down south.
Yeah.
And they specialized in dates. So according to this book, those palm trees down there would not be able to use the lulaving from those trees.
I don't know. You're right. That's what he seems to say. But I'm not sure that he's excluding. You know, this is not a halach in geography, meaning it's not that the geographic location determines whether it's a lulav or not. He's saying that this is where our lulavim come from. Now, if you would take a lulav tree from El Arish or from, from Yericho and replant it, you know, graft it into your backyard, I think it would still be a lulav tree. The fact that it grew in Yerushalayim, that doesn't possibly. But he's saying that these are the locations from which, you know, the boys, I know the Hezer boys go out, you know, a lot of times and they sell lulavim. And they are going to these areas, he says, to get that lulavim. Oh. He says the following. That there's certain lulavim sheha'olim shalahem dvukim lashidra. They're completely connected to the spine. And he says the following. L'shitas ha-ritva v'aramba. So, you know, the Ritva lived, let's say, 9 centuries ago. The Rambam lived 5 centuries ago. So, but you're dealing with important poskim. He says that if you have olim that are absolutely connected to the shidra in such a way that you can't even separate them from the shidra. He says, in such a case, according to the Ritva and the Rambam, the lulav is not a lulav. I'll read it to you. He says, pa'amim, he says you can find lulavim, that ha'olim shalahem dvukim l'shidra, right, in such a way that e'ef shalafridam me'ashidra, you can't remove them from the shidra. And he says that you'll find these lulavim in certain places. He goes on, And he says, listen to this. Kevon shall olam shalem ena mufradim ashidri. You can't separate them from the spine. El smudim la. Ef shalakayim bahem mitzvahs nanuim. This is interesting because when I do nanuim, I'll tell you what gets me tense and nervous about nanuim. If you start shaking the lulav, and some people shake it like, you know, like there's no tomorrow, then I'm always afraid that it'll be nifridu olam. But he's saying that, again, leaving out the radical case of nifridu olam, there should be some movement over here, you know, of the, and if you've got a lulav where it's like one long shidra, and all the olam are part of the shidra, and they're inseparable, so you shake it from now until doomsday, and you won't see nothing happens. Yeah, it's like a stick. He's saying that's not a lulav.
Is that where you use the word kaskas?
Yeah. Lukaskes.
How do you translate it?
Lukaskes is to shake something.
Okay.
So therefore, for example, he says lulavei yarden, which I guess you're saying means Jordan. I thought he meant from the Jordan Valley, but okay, let's say lulavei yarden. Tzrichim bedika. Don't just take a lulav yarden and take it as assumption that it's kosher. He says, "Sarf bedik, you better check it out. If nitan lafridit ha'olam in ashidra, then it's kosher, even according to the Ramah, according to the Ritva and the Ramah. But lefamim hem kol kach dvukim ve'ofet sheyefshal lafridom, v'yos hem chelik min ashidra, v'nidonim kishidra. They have the status of a shidra, b'li olam upsun. So we need two things. We need a shidra, we need olam. And if it's inseparable, then it becomes a shidra, and it's not olam." Now here he has a couple of pictures of lulavim, or shall I say palm trees that are possible. So again, this requires a little bit more work. I don't know, how much time do we have?
3 minutes. 3 minutes, yeah.
3 minutes. So let me just say, in the last 3 minutes that we have, something about the canary palm tree, which honestly I'd never heard of until I opened up this book. I'm not a bucky in palm trees. See, he says the following, and I'll pass this around. Show and tell, right? He says, this is a kosher lulav tree. Why? This tree is tall, it's thin, as opposed to this one, that's the canary tree. Tall and thin, it's got dates coming out of it like the gazoo, you know. The lulavim go up in a vertical position, by and large. And he says that if you look at the, how do you say in English, the geza of the tree, the trunk of the tree. If you look at the trunk of the tree, okay, he has another picture that's a little clearer. Here's the trunk of a lulav tree. You'll see, this is called chatotrot, not tefillin, but chatotrot. They go very high, these pieces. This is a canary tree, okay? And he says that Rav Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion that this lulav is possible, and he can't use it. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had a different view, but at the end, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, Kfar Hora Zaken, he, out of respect to Rav Moshe, he said, I'm going to accept his psak. So Rav Moshe points out that there are a number of different elements here or features that make this different than a lulav tree. First of all, he says it's very short, so the stump is very thick. Do you see the difference? It's like three times the thickness. Then he says that the leaves don't go up high in a vertical position, but rather they bend over in a curved position. So you take a look, for example, about this chatotrot. Do you see the difference? This is a kosher lulav tree. It has these chatotros, which again, I don't know the exact. If anybody has a dictionary, we can look it up. The English translation, but they're very tall. Do you see that? Very long. Here, they're very stumpy. Very short. Okay, here the tree has lulavim that go straight up. Here, the lulavim, by and large, again, there are some that go a little bit, it's hard to see in the picture.
I don't think so much as straight as that they bend, they curve.
They curve. Here they curve. He shows you a curved one, I think, in a different picture here. Oh, look at the difference between the fruits, right? These are the fruits of a classical Dekel Shel Lulavim. ulavim ksherim. These are the smaller types of fruits that are very spread out on a twig in the canary tree. You know, it came to the point where I guess Rav Moshe said there's so many differences between our lulav that we have traditionally through the centuries and the canary lulav, that the canary lulav is not a lulav. He says, for example, this is a lulav of a canary tree. Do you see how it has a curvature to it? This lulav is more or less horizontal, not totally, but it doesn't have that curvature. He says, for example, the lulav tree has a white powder on it. Do you see that white powder? So, for example, if you would take off a branch from a lulav tree, your fingers would be full of a white powder. He says that if you take a look at the distance, this is a little bit more subtle, but the difference between the spaces, this is a classical lulav tree, and the olim of the lulav are spaced somewhat significantly apart from each other. Here, in the case of the canary tree, there's a very insignificant space between one olim and the other. So I'll give this to you to take a look at. The other final distinction he makes is that the tiomis, in the case of a classical lulav, starts somewhere, I wouldn't say in the middle of the shidra, because it's certainly on the top of the shidra, but there's a long, long tiomis. Here, in the case of a canary, the tiomis starts almost at the very top. So these are things that you want to be careful about, because he's saying that there are lulavim coming now in the shuk from all over the place, and you don't even know. So some of these things you'd have to go back to the original tree to figure out, but at least it gives you some indication that it might be a canary tree.
Well, unfortunately,
this picture shows you how to calculate three tefachim.
One of the things in Google says that many of the lulavim being sold in Israel are from a canary.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know how true it is.
Yeah, how does he know?
It's true. You know, it's Google.
Okay, so we'll stop here. And then just if anybody wants to look this over,
see you tomorrow.
I thought this was pretty fascinating.
Yeah. You know. Thank you. Also, I was joking. He said it must be from the Canary Islands, but it says that it is
from the Canary Islands.
Originally.
It was transplanted from
the Canary Islands. Must have been transplanted. It says originally.
The Canary Islands are where? That's off America?
No, I don't think they're off Spain.
Spain. Yeah.